I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo.
A gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into another episode of The Memo. It's a new week. It's a Monday, January the 18th, 2016. Brad Locke here with you, along with Emma Kent.
Thanks, Brad.
Hey, Emma. How's it going?
Two in a row.
I'm getting good at getting your name right.
I know. Yeah. So proud.
Derek Russell, still not with us. He's off having fun at Disney World. Slacking is what I call it.
The nerve of him.
Yeah, really. So anyway, he's not with us this week, but you still got us. Did you see the snow flurries this morning, Emma?
Yes. How could I have missed them?
Yeah.
Well, so much snow.
I know. If school hadn't been closed today, probably would have closed.
Probably.
Anyway, I mean, it was a pretty decent amount of dusting on my windshield wipers.
Yeah.
So.
In fact, Chris, can I take a break? I think I need to go buy some milk and some eggs. some bread.
They're all gone. It's too late.
It's been mass casualties from stampeding at the Walmart and Kroger. People getting milk and bread. So I think that's about all we're going to get, though. Nothing like last year when we had that nice.
But that wasn't until March last year, so there's still time.
True. We get snow at weird times around here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's going to be cold, though, all day today and most of the week. It's supposed to warm up, and then it's going to rain, which is what happens. We get precipitation in January, and it decides it's going to warm up. That's how it works.
So, weather, man.
I don't know. Maybe we'll get a snow this winter. Anyway, happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day to everybody. It's an important day for everyone. And Tupelo has certainly been recognizing Dr. King this past weekend. With several events, which you can read about in the journal or at djournal.com. Had a service yesterday with Melvin Leventhal, civil rights attorney, kind of a pioneer during the civil rights movement back in the 60s. And also, you may recall, we had Kenneth Mayfield, chairman of the Committee for King here in Tupelo. Had him on the show last week. And then we recorded a little segment with him just talking about Dr. King and kind of what he means to him. And, you know, he's also a civil rights attorney, Kenneth Mayfield is, and has done a lot of work in that field. So we had that, did that last week, a little extra segment with Mr. Mayfield, and I wanted to play that for you right now. Okay, let's speak for a moment here with Kenneth Mayfield, chairman of the Committee for King. This is a pre-recorded segment from late last week, a big MLK weekend here in Tupelo. And, Kenneth, first off, welcome back. We had you on the show last week, and welcome back to the program.
Yes, good to be back again.
I want to ask you just kind of some personal thoughts on Martin Luther King. I know when he was killed, you were a teenager at the time.
Yes.
So kind of what was that impact on you? Because I'm sure, you know, you were paying very close attention to that whole movement at that time.
Yes, I was a senior in high school in 1968. I graduated from Fanta Carter High in Oklahoma, which is now Oklahoma High School. And so I was a senior that year looking forward to graduating from high school and enrolling in Ole Miss when I received the news that Dr. King had been assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee. And it was like one of those really, it was like a parent that the news hit like a brick. And it was like a parent had just been killed.
Yeah.
I actually was 9 years old when my father was killed in an automobile accident. And the impact that Dr. King had was more dramatic than when my father got killed because I was younger, of course, at that time. And but it was a very sinking feeling. Like now the world is going to turn upside down. So the things that we had hoped for under Dr. King, it was like, now we'll never see them come to fruition.
Yeah. Which, as it turned out, thankfully, his legacy carried, and other people carried on his legacy and his dream. And Hack, I'm kind of curious how, you know, you became a civil rights attorney.
Yes.
How did he inspire you?
Well, when I went to Ole Miss as a freshman, of course, that was kind of breaking ranks from the status quo in Oklahoma. In fact, I took pride in being the first black to leave Oklahoma to go to Ole Miss. My mother resisted it, and rightfully so. But after 2 years at Ole Miss, I was suspended for civil rights demonstrations. And after I got kicked out of Ole Miss, I went to Tougaloo College. And it was there at Tougaloo College where I had decided to kind of work within the system. I had already decided to become a lawyer, but my idea was to be a rich lawyer. And after my experiences and transition to Tougaloo College, I decided that I wanted to fight for civil rights.
I'm kind of curious, what was the specifics of the Ole Miss situation there?
We went into an event at Fulton Chapel in 1970, February 1970, and a group was performing there, international group of youth, and my name of it was Up With People, and consists of, I think, over 100 nationalities. So it's a peace-loving group that was there,
right.
And we thought it was a good opportunity for us to go in and kind of take over the mic system and make our situation known at Ole Miss. And so a group of us went in and demonstrated, went on stage with the group and commenced to help them sing. And our help was not appreciated, should I say.
Well, can't fault your enthusiasm.
So they got, eight of us got kicked out. They called us the eight leaders. It was not so much leaders, it was that we were at the front.
Right.
You know, gotcha. And they took our pictures and they had good evidence on us.
Oh,
and
man.
Some of the others, they didn't have as good of evidence.
Well, now that it's 2016, Kenneth, I mean, from that time to now, just how far have we come? I know we got a long way to go still, but.
We've come a long way. We've come a long way. We actually came a long way in a very short period of time when you look at it in perspective.
Yeah.
From 1968, for example, to the 1980s, we have made remarkable progress. Unfortunately, we're dealing with some issues now that facing our community that I think are hampering our progress. It's just some issues that I'm concerned with that I see in our communities involving youth, and this is in the African American community.
Yeah.
So we made a lot of progress for sure, but I'm not sure we are making progress as we sit here and speak right now. I think we're still riding on the backs of those who paved the way to get us to where we are today.
I got you. Well, what's it going to take, you think, to go beyond that?
I'm thinking it's going to take some awakening in the community. And I think this movement needs to come from within the ranks of the African-American community.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really concerned with our youth. Do they even get the message of where we've come from? We have our youth, for example, that we have a very difficult time getting them to even vote.
Yeah.
They don't see a need to vote. And they'll say, well, they are going to do what they are going to do in a way and don't take the opportunity to go vote. Some of the images that I'm seeing in our community that are disturbing.
Yeah.
Years ago, we had a problem with the sagged pants, for example, and I'm glad to know that that's not as bad as it used to be.
Yeah,
we made a little progress on that. My son finished high school at Tupelo High, and I was dealing with him trying to wear the sagged pants too, and I was taking my son and daughter to school, and I'm asking him, do you actually think I'm going to let you get out of my car and with your pants sagging? And so he would wear a long shirt because that was so much in at that time.
Yeah.
And now, of course, he's a grown man and he can sag if he wants to, but he decides not to. It's not such a good thing to do. You know? So we got a lot of work in our community, and it's going to take a wake-up call. I don't know. I was kind of hoping this police misconduct issue might wake up the community, that we make some changes. But these changes, I truly feel like a lot of these are going to have to come from within the community.
Mr. Kenneth Mayfield, again, chairman of the Committee for King, civil rights attorney. Thanks for your time, sir.
Thank you.
Need to remind you that the Daily Journal is inviting filmmakers to participate in the new Entertain Us movie contest. It's open to anyone, and video submissions can run anywhere from 1 second to 5 minutes. It can be shot on an iPhone, camcorder, or any other device. Videos will go head-to-head in a bracket-style competition, and viewers will vote for their favorites. Participants should upload their video to YouTube and email the link to entertainus@journalinc.com. That's journalinc.com. Registration is now open and will continue until 11:59 p.m. on Wednesday. There is no registration fee. The Ultimate Entertain Us winner will get a personalized director's chair and a director's slate. The winner is expected to be crowned around Oscars weekend. Okay, let's talk of the lottery. Let's bring in Bobby Harrison down from Jackson, our Capitol Bureau reporter. Bobby, how you doing on this Monday?
All right, Brad. I was really surprised to see you at work. I thought last week you were going to win that lottery and be gone.
I was so hopeful. So hopeful. I had so many plans, Bobby. So many plans. No, I wouldn't have quit. I wouldn't have quit right away because, you know, I do like my job and the people here. But, hey, maybe they'll have a lottery in Mississippi someday. I don't know. They had the Powerball, of course. That was a $1.6 billion jackpot. Ended up with three people winning with winning tickets, splitting that jackpot. Still a lot of money, even three ways. A lot of people from Mississippi, including myself and others here, we went across state lines up to Tennessee, got ourselves some Powerball tickets. Saw that a lot. I don't know if there's any way to really measure that, Bobby, but that seems to be what happened. People going across state lines to get those tickets, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, yeah, they were. I mean, down here in the Jackson area, you know, you're 45 minutes away from the Mississippi River over at Vicksburg. And I can anecdotal evidence of, you know, just scores of people I know, and I don't need people, I don't guess, going up across the state line there at Vicksburg to buy tickets and talk about long lines. And a lot of those long lines were made by Mississippians. But we're, as you said, we're one of six states that do not have the statewide lottery, so thus we weren't participants in the nationwide Powerball lottery.
Yeah, the other states are Alabama, Nevada, Utah, Hawaii, and Alaska. You probably have a better memory of this than I do, Bobby. Better historical perspective as far as the lottery in Mississippi. What's kind of been, obviously we don't have it, but what's been the feeling on that over the years?
Well, there's been a lot of opposition through the years. You know, if you recall back in the early 90s, there was actually a constitutional ban on lottery in Mississippi in the early 90s, kind of led by Ray Mabus, who wasn't even in office, I don't believe, by the time the actual statewide vote had come. He had been defeated by Kirk Fordyce. But he kind of made a linchpin in funding his education reform proposals, a statewide lottery. And he, you know, a clarion call while he was in office was let the people vote on it. And then in 92, I think it was put on the ballot to remove the constitutional ban. It did pass. But then when the ban was removed, they couldn't muster the votes in the legislature to actually put a lottery in place. And then casino gambling kind of took off. And now you have not only, and I put this in quotes, the Baptists opposing the lottery. There's other religious groups that also opposed the lottery. But also the casinos, because, you know, casino operators feel that, you know, a lottery would actually take money away from out of their pockets. There's only so much disposable income. People who, if they play the lottery, may not have as much money to go and play blackjack or the slots at the casinos.
Oh.
So it's kind of interesting that another state, we know it is not adverse to gambling per se, but does not have the lottery, is Nevada, which is the biggest casino state in America, of course. So, I mean, that's
right.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you think about, oh, we got casinos, so gambling is okay in that way legally, but not the lottery. But they are, like you said, really two different things. I mean, Tate Reeves said that, you know, the casinos, they provide jobs and such. And is it just that they don't think maybe it'll really have that much of an economic impact?
Well, you know, there's all sorts of arguments made by a lot smarter people than I on both sides back in the 90s. You know, from a historical perspective, our paper editorially was against not only the lottery but casinos. But we were, you know, editorially, our position was much more opposed to the lottery. And, you know, there's an argument that, you know, there's something not right about the state actually advertising to get people to spend money on, you know, what is actually a folly. You know, your chances of winning the lottery are so slim. So,
right.
You know, there's that opposition. And then there's, you know, the argument that the lottery, you know, high prime makes the argument that the lottery's not really going to generate much new revenue for the state. And the revenue it does generate is not, you know, it's not worth the, he says it's a regressive tax that, you know, the people who most likely pay it or play the lottery, the people who can least afford it. So he makes that argument. The flip side is, you know, see in other states, Georgia funds its scholarship program. I think they still do that through their statewide lottery. And, you know, and the argument is it's, you know, it's a, you know, no one's forced to play the lottery. It's a voluntary thing. And,
yeah.
And it, you know, it generates revenue for the state. So, you know, there's strong feelings on both sides. And obviously it doesn't, you know, the casinos do have an economic benefit out past just the gambling that they provide. They, you know, they employ people in hotels, restaurants, in all sorts of service sectors. So
yeah,
the lottery would not. So, you know, those are some of the arguments for and against the lottery. But, you know, the bottom line is there may be more of a concerted effort this year to pass a lottery. But, you know, with the lieutenant governor, I'm sure I didn't talk to the speaker for my story, but I'm sure the speaker is also opposed to the lottery. And the governor is adamantly opposed to the lottery. So, you know, bottom line, it's not going to go anywhere.
You mentioned Hob Bryan, the Democrat from Amory a while ago, who's opposed to it. And, of course, Tate Reeves and Phil Bryant, the governor, also opposed to it. So this obviously does not go straight down party lines. Is it just kind of mixed feelings overall down there in the legislature?
Yeah, it's almost, Senator Bryan's opposition is sort of a partially, I mean, I'm probably putting words in his mouth, but partially moral and partially the fact that it doesn't do what it's purported to do, that actually it's not a new generator of income for the state. Those would be his arguments. And I guess that'd be Governor Bryant's and Lieutenant Governor Reed's arguments as well. But this is not separated so much. You know, the Coast legislators, for instance, which is kind of interesting, but the Coast legislators all seem to be for the lottery. Even though, you know, their constituents, the casino operators would be against it. The Coast senators even bought a lot of tickets for their colleagues in the Senate to kind of build support for the lottery, which I thought was interesting and kind of funny. I think it's, I mean, to a extent, it's almost a rural urban issue too. I mean, you know, the river counties, you know, and the coast counties always been a little bit more willing to accept things like gambling and even liquor when it got to votes in the legislature. And it's interesting, you go back and look at the vote in 92, the statewide vote. I mean, Northeast Mississippi voters were, you know, they were the, you know, while it passed statewide, it did not pass in Northeast Mississippi. And Northeast Mississippi legislators were some of the leaders in preventing the lottery from ever being enacted after the ban was lifted.
Okay, y'all can read Bobby's story about this in Sunday's Journal and at djournal.com. Bobby, appreciate you, man.
All right, appreciate it. Y'all take care.
Hey, I need to remind y'all, speaking of Bobby Harrison, going to have his weekly webcast today. We're doing this every Monday throughout this current legislative session. Bobby and myself are going to be chatting about what's going on down there. You can watch it live at djournal.com sometime this afternoon. And if you miss it, you can watch the replay. We'll keep it up on the site. So be sure to check that out at djournal.com. Djournal.com. Bobby Harrison, our Capitol Bureau reporter on the webcast. Okay, time now for today's news memo. And for more on these stories, read the Daily Journal or visit djournal.com. The city of Tupelo had an increase in sales tax revenue for the sixth straight month. Chief Financial Officer Kim Hanna said sales tax collections are exceeding budget expectations by $272,000. They're up over last year's actual amount by $210,000. Tupelo Mayor Jason Shelton said the increase is a sign of a vibrant economy.
Terrell K. Moffitt was sworn in on Friday as the newest Chancery Judge in the 1st District. Moffitt was appointed by Governor Phil Bryant to fill out the term of Talmadge Little John, who died on October 26th. A special election will be held in November to fill the seat. Chancery courts deal with domestic matters, including adoptions, custody disputes, divorces, sanity hearings, and wills.
Two members of the Dave Matthews Band will be at Northeast Mississippi Community College on Wednesday. Jeff Coffin and Rashawn Ross will give a master class at 4:30 p.m. That will be followed by a concert with the Northeast Jazz Ensemble at 7:30 p.m. Concert will be held at Hines Hall Auditorium. It's free to Northeast faculty, staff, and students. Cost is $5 for the public.
The Tennessee Valley Authority is asking homeowners to fill out a survey to help it make the homes it serves more energy efficient. The eScore self-audit can be taken online, on paper, or through a free app. It takes about 15 minutes to complete. About 12 weeks after residents have submitted the audit, TVA will send a kit in the mail with such items as fluorescent light bulbs, low-flow showerheads, and foam insulation. It will also give tips for upgrades. To take the audit, visit www.2escore.com or search for the TVA eScore app.
Need to remind y'all about Thrive Marketing, a full-service digital marketing company located in Tupelo, providing websites, search engine optimization, social media management, email, and text messaging services for local businesses online at thrive.ms.
All right, now we've got business editor Dennis Sid here with us to talk about Walmart, who is closing 6 Walmart Express stores in North Mississippi, which will impact about 180 workers. Dennis, tell us just a little bit about why Walmart Stores is closing these Walmart Express stores.
Well, back in October, Walmart said they were looking at their operations and seeing what was profitable, what was underperforming, and trying to get a bigger piece of the pie. Although Walmart's the world's largest retailer, profit is slim, and so they're trying to optimize their stores. So they're closing 259 stores, both here in the U.S. and globally combined. And more than 100 of those are those Walmart Express stores, which are the smaller 10 and 12,000 square feet. Now, some of the stores will have Walmart Neighborhood Market signs on the front of them. And people are asking, what about the neighborhood market we're getting here in Tupelo? Well, the neighborhood market we're getting here in Tupelo is 45,000 square feet. So it's a really big one. Somewhere along the lines, Walmart had split into the bigger and smaller format neighborhood markets. And then they decided, well, we'll call the smaller neighborhood markets Walmart Express. But they didn't change all the signs. So that's where some of the confusion is. And turns out they don't need to change the signs now since they're going to close the stores, which the 6 in North Mississippi. Well, there are only 6 in the state, and they're all in this part of the state. And they all open within the last year or so. So, you know, they built these stores, they bought the land, or leased the land, leased the building, one or the other. And so they're closing after, you know, a year, which leaves a lot of people in town, mayors and officials puzzled because, you know, they're all saying people were shopping these stores. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, paying taxes, helping the town out, and now they're closing it. So, you know, we don't know the financials of, you know, or the decision-making process, but it seems kind of odd. It's one of those things that I guess a retailer the size of Walmart can do.
Yeah. And you mentioned the reaction of some of the mayors of those towns where the stores are closing. Did you talk to any customers or anyone, or have you heard from anyone? Just kind of what's the general reaction?
I personally didn't get to talk to any of the customers, but I think the general feeling is that, you know, why do this to our community? You know, yeah. They were convenient places because they were in smaller towns like Nettleton and Durham, which also might have, you know, they might have a Dollar General or a Fred's, and sort of they were all competing against each other. So it's not like they don't have options, but still, you know, when you open a new store like that, you're always going to have customers. And so I think it'll be inconvenient for some. Walmart says they wanted to do it. These stores are within 10 miles of a larger Walmart, although I don't know if that's the case exactly with Nettleton or Calhoun City or Derma, which is close to Calhoun City, which doesn't have a Walmart. So, you know, who knows?
Well, I guess we will find out. Thanks, Dennis, for joining us.
Sure. You're welcome.
Hey, I need to remind y'all about the other podcast that we produce here at the Daily Journal. We've got another episode of Prep Rally coming for you Wednesday. That's our high school sports podcast with myself and Gene Phelps. You can listen to that on iTunes or your podcast apps or at preprally.djournal.com. Then on Thursday, a new episode of Double Coverage, Ole Miss and Mississippi State Sports Talk with Paris Alford and Logan Lowry. Listen to that on iTunes as well or your podcast apps or at doublecoverage.djournal.com. Guess what time it is?
It's crime o'clock.
It's crime o'clock.
That was really bad.
Nice.
Yeah, so Brad.
Hey.
What happened with the crime reports last week? What was going on?
Last week was a busy, busy week. We've started the new year off with a bang. We had some good ones.
Literal bangs?
Not really any bangs.
That's
literal,
good.
But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Metaphorical bangs. People acting a fool, as I like to say. We're going to start off with a kind of a long one here, but It's interesting. An officer spotted a man standing on the side of the road near the mall with a sign saying his family was struggling. People were stopping and giving him cash donations. When asked if he had a permit to be at that intersection and accepting donations, the man began filming the officer on his cell phone and accused the officer of violating his First Amendment rights. I didn't know you had to have a permit to do that. I guess you do. It makes sense. But you see people out there all the time.
To what? To ask
to basically
for,
panhandle.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see him out on that side of town a lot.
Yeah, I didn't know you needed a permit either.
But anyway, the officer told him he could not panhandle in Tupelo and explained where the city limits were, so the man left walking north. About an hour later, same officer found the same man with the same sign. When confronted, the man again started filming the officer. The man said he was not leaving. He did leave in the back of the patrol car, arrested for disorderly conduct. Listen, the guy's just trying to make some kind of documentary, right?
I was going to say that Michael Moore.
That's what I'm thinking.
Undercover.
The documentary is about where you can ask for money and where you can't.
He's just the life of a homeless person or a struggling person. I don't know.
People have done that before, right?
I'm sure they have.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I wouldn't be surprised. It sounds like a...
But yeah.
I'm something just confused.
I don't know that he's homeless. Just said his family's struggling. I'm sure he's got a place to live.
You have to have a permit to do that, how do you, I mean, like, people who panhandle normally don't really have any money.
For the permit.
Yeah, so. Yeah,
is there a permit
fee? I'm curious, like, how much is the permit?
I have no idea.
Or is it free, or?
Not a clue.
I don't know.
Not a clue.
Something to research.
Yeah, certainly.
Coming soon to a theater near you.
A documentary about getting arrested for panhandling. A Horn Lane woman called Waste Management and threatened to beat up the garbage men if they don't stop leaving the garbage can in front of her mailbox, preventing her from getting mail. Wow.
Can someone not just...
I don't know. Usually, after they come, you bring the mailbox back up your driveway. But maybe she's, like, gone.
I'd challenge them to a duel.
Yeah, that's what she should do.
She should.
I mean, she's willing to take on two garbage men. Okay. I mean, I give her points for having cojones, but to do that. But I don't know. It seems like a bit of an overreaction. I mean, the garbage men probably shouldn't leave it in front of the mailboxes. Let's be honest. They should put it on the other side of the driveway. But
I mean, usually people, why didn't she just put her trash can on the other side of the driveway?
Maybe she does, and they put it back over there. I don't know.
Doesn't seem to make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. My garbage men on my street always leave it about where they found it.
Yeah.
On the opposite
side. It seems
side
like extra work for the garbage men. Yeah. Maybe they have it out for her.
Maybe so.
Maybe she puts, like, really weird garbage in her can, and they're tired of looking at it.
That could be it.
They're dealing with it. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. Maybe she'll be back in the crime reports in a couple of weeks
for
fighting a garbage man.
One of those people who pours, like, liquids in the garbage can.
Oh, God.
And then, like, when you pick up the bag, it just leaks everywhere.
Listen, one of the... being a garbage man, or as Opus from Bloom County put it years ago, waste management artisan. that's one of the jobs I would not want. And I have the highest respect for people that do that job.
Yeah.
Because, A, it stinks. Literally.
Literally.
Yeah.
And B, but there's no telling what people put in those garbage cans that you got to deal with. I mean, I'm sure they come across, like, dead animals and...
Live ones.
And, like, unwrapped diapers and who knows what else.
There's a commercial in New Orleans for, a private garbage collection agency, River Parish Disposal, and it says, "Our business stinks, but it's picking up."
Nah.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good, yeah. I don't know why I remember that Bloom County cartoon from years ago. It was just... And by the way, I follow, it's back, Bloom County.
Yeah.
Burke Breathitt has revived the cartoon strip,
Where do you find it?
You find it on Facebook. He's got a Facebook page. So I follow it, and three or four times a week he's got a new strip, and it's fantastic.
So I'm just a kid.
I grew up reading that stuff. I mean, that's way, way back before your time, Emma.
Yeah, I grew up with computers.
Well, you need to go get caught up on Opus and Steve Dallas.
I read my comics online.
And Milo and all those guys.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah. Bloom County. Anyway.
There's more.
Next, a woman said that her baby daddy's girlfriend, in quotes, followed her from West Main Street to the mall where she works. Along the way, the suspect was honking her horn and yelling. Was following her the whole way to the mall, honking and yelling for who knows what reason. I mean, it's her baby daddy's girlfriend, so it's, I guess, her ex's girlfriend, but they have a kid together, so there's obviously some animosity there between the two women.
Jealousy.
Or something. I don't know. I mean, like, the one doing the yelling and honking, you've got the guy. So I don't know.
Right.
Maybe she thinks she's trying to get back with him.
Yeah, right.
There's no telling. So much drama. So much drama happening around the mall.
She's not secure in having the guy, I guess.
They should go to counseling.
Yeah.
You need to feel secure in your relationships, guys. Right. Okay? Don't feel threatened by someone else. Okay?
Don't honk your horn.
This means you don't trust your partner.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Okay. Love Lines with Brad Locke. Advice for your relationships here on The Memo. Okay, we got one more here. This is my favorite one from the week. It's bad to steal, but I love the... I kind of respect the guy just for his boldness. The cashier at a West Main Street Asian restaurant said a man came in, used the bathroom, sat at a table, but did not order. That's not creepy. When she turned her back, the man got up and left. She noticed the tip jar with about $30 in it was missing. She found a business card with, in quotes, "I'm gone with yo money" on the back of the card on the counter. He got a business card, wrote, "I'm gone with yo money." He took time to do that, put it on the counter, and took off with the tip jar.
I hope he got a fortune cookie, too.
Did he sign his name?
No, I don't think he's that dumb. But I'm curious what business it was. I'm sure it wasn't his business. He probably, who knows if he's employed, but... I mean, that's different. I give him some points for that.
Points for creativity, right?
Yeah, yeah. He just straight up told you, "Hey, take your money." I like that he actually spelled it that way. Y-O, yo
right,
money.
Right.
So maybe he's confused on the different ways to spell your. Didn't want to, you know, mess that up. Yo money. I'm gone with yo money.
Get a handwriting sample.
Yeah. Maybe get a
CSI.
Maybe get a print off that card. So anyway, those are your crime reports for today. You can go read more at tipsheet.djournal.com. And that's the show.
That's it.
That's it, Emma.
Another Monday.
Yeah, another Monday
in the books.
In the books.
A snowy Monday.
Yes, I slightly.
A blizzard, if you will.
Well, by North Mississippi standards, I suppose. I think it's moving on out, though.
Yeah.
So.
Unfortunately.
Sorry, kids. You got to go to school tomorrow. Okay, remember to follow the show on Twitter at DJournalMemo and send us an email with your questions or comments. It's memo@journalinc.com. Check out the website, DJournal.com, and our Twitter is at DJournalNow. I'm on Twitter at Brad Locke. Emma is on Twitter at M. Crawford Kent. That's at E.M. Crawford Kent. Emma Kent.
Yes.
Thanks for co-hosting again, Emma. Appreciate you filling in.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
Okay.
We can make this a permanent thing.
We could.
If we don't tell
Derek. Derek doesn't come back soon. It's going to be me and you doing this show.
Done. On.
Yeah, Chris.
Chris says it's done. It's done.
It's done. He's the boss here.
Yep.
Okay.
Sorry, right. Derek.
Have fun in Disney World, though. Okay. All right. We'll be back on Wednesday. So until then, y'all have a good one.